Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Different Strokes for Different Folks, to find common ground and take it to the next level with David Clark here on Blog Talk Radio. Each week, the show will encourage you to keep an open mind and prepare to open the door to new understandings. We will have an exciting array of diverse guests who will point up the fact that we are all spiritual beings having a human experience. Now your host, David Clark.
Welcome to Different Strokes for Different Folks, where we will be finding common ground and taking it to the next level. I'm your host, David Clark. I'm a spiritual adventurer, and I suggest you become the same. This show will encourage you to keep an open mind and prepare to open the door to new understandings. It's my hope that you will come to see that despite our seeming differences, we're all basically the same. My guests will have differing spiritual belief systems, and some will have no spiritual beliefs. You may or you may not agree with things that are said. What I'd ask you to do is keep an open mind. This way, you can see where you can find common ground so that you can relate rather than compare yourself to others. Now, tonight, my guest is Dr. Stephen Wexler. Dr. Steve, as his patients call him, is a graduate of the Palmer School of Chiropractic and has been in private practice in Syracuse, New York for over 25 years. His love for knowledge and health brought him to India to study. Oh, my goodness, Steve, can you help me out?
Ayurveda.
Ayurveda, a sister science of yoga as well as spiritual matters. Breaking free of a speech impediment in 1988 at a transformational seminar, Dr. Steve went on to host many live radio and television shows, as well as teach chiropractic Ayurvedic seminars.
Ayurveda, very good, David.
Okay, getting there. From a recent car accident resulting in injury and surgery, Dr. Steve has discovered healing with light from LED and cold laser to increase the velocity of the healing of the body. Dr. Steve is very involved in his community through weekly spiritual gatherings and volunteer work as a chiropractor and adaptive ski instructor, as well as a community event organizer. And so you've already heard the voice of Dr. Steve. Steve, how are you tonight?
I'm fabulous. I had just a great day today.
Oh, that's wonderful. Every day should be that way. And actually, we have the power
to do
that. Sometimes
we even notice it.
And sometimes we even notice
we have a great day.
Well, we were talking about that before the show began. Awareness is such an important thing, don't you think?
Well, I think it's the crux of it all. I mean, is our life any different except when we're aware of it being that way, you know? Or it just goes
yeah.
on?
It does, yeah. And it is what it is, and it's all good.
Absolutely. Oh. You know, I always like to say one of my spiritual teachers, you know, always reminded us that we are light, sound, and vibration. You know, this physical body, this physicality, this kind of flesh that we give a name to is just a part of us. It's not the major part. It's just, you know, the part that kind of moves the vessel around. But we're really this energetic being, like you were saying, a spiritual being having a human experience. And that spiritual being is much more this light, sound, and vibration than we are flesh and bone.
Well, I would agree with that. I mean, we live in a vibrational universe, and certainly the level of our vibration affects our moods, and so I find it's very important for me to keep in a healthy state of mind, keep my moods elevated, pursue my joy, and then my level of vibration remains high. So, it's... Do you have anything else you want to say about that?
Yeah, you know, I grew up in Long Island, and I had kind of the typical middle-class Jewish upbringing, you know, went to school, went to Hebrew school afterwards, you know, after school every day, went to summer camp. But I lived this kind of slothy, cloudy life that was really just about, you know, food and survival. You know, there was this intense, I stuttered most of my life and stuttered to the point where I was fearful to talk to people. And it really made such an impact in my life, meeting people, making friends. I had a few close friends, but not really many. I wasn't, you know, involved in sports. I roller skated a lot. I bike rode a lot. I did a lot on my own. And couldn't speak in front of other people, especially in front of groups, even small groups. Teachers would make me stay in during lunch breaks to talk with kids to try to break me of the stutter. All through high school, avoided any kind of oral exam or anything that I had to, like, get up and say something, especially if I have to read it from some kind of text. And that went all through high school, college, chiropractic school. I joined a fraternity, and it became so painful because you had to repeat a lot of stuff by rote or reading, and people would make fun of me. What I was involved in at that time was a man named Anthony Robbins, Tony Robbins. A lot of people know him as the NLP, you know, seminar firewalk guy. And my brother paid for me to go to a firewalk in New York City. And I sat through the seminar. I walked on 12 feet of 2,000-degree coals. I sat through the next 2 days, which was really how to change, like, what our patterns are, our mental patterns that we have. So what I did is I took the next year and literally laid in bed and transformed these patterns in my head, making the kind of scary things smaller, the great things bigger, really changed the meaning of the events that happened in my life. But I still had this stutter. I ended up in a different set of circumstances, actually becoming Tony's chiropractor when he traveled in the Midwest. It's a whole other story about that. I'll share it maybe at a different time. But I got invited to Tony's house for the first weekend ever of what's called Date with Destiny. And it was myself and 19 CEOs of companies from around the world, Lockheed Martin, Guaranteed Overnight Delivery. And number one, I couldn't believe I was there. But Tony invited me there. I worked on him and his wife and some of the crew. And you had to write about yourself. And I wrote that this big impediment of my life was this speech impediment that I had. People might have seen The King's Speech. That movie turned my stomach inside out because that's exactly how I felt. I was almost fearful that the movie would bring it back. I mean, that's how identified I was with it. I wrote about this, and Tony and this guy Michael Hadley were doing this double trance induction. Tony was talking about flying in an Air Force jet. Michael Hadley was talking about flying in a crop duster. Michael Hadley walked over to me, touched my shoulder, and said, "Hey, Steve, that everyone screws up on a word, you just hang on to it." And I've never stuttered since. It just left me.
What happened the week after
was I was invited to speak in front of a group of 500 people at a Masonic temple that I didn't know actually I was going to do. I showed up that day for a graduation of these Masonic levels, and they said, you're one of the fastest raised Masons in history in the United States. I did it in a month, and people sometimes take years to go through the process. And I was a convocation speaker, and people showed up from all over, like Illinois, Iowa. And I spoke in front of 500 people, and I had this intense joy being able to share with people. And since then, I've been on radio. I've hosted radio for about 8 years. I hosted about 30 TV shows in Canada. And I have the benefit of that life as a stutterer that makes me a better speaker. It's a really interesting, really, really tremendous part of my life to go through.
Well, that's an interesting statement you just made. How do you feel that it makes you a better speaker, that experience?
Well,
that
I have all the coping mechanisms of a stutterer still, you know, and those don't just leave you. And what it did is, even on radio, I had this ability to just speak off the cuff, because I couldn't read off the cuff when I was a stutterer. I'd have to just speak. There's no way I could. When I was in Stony Brook, I was a swim instructor, and I had to pass on the reading of attendance, because there's no way I could do that. So I developed these coping mechanisms that let me kind of think freely, because if I thought from something written down exactly or had to read from that, I would stutter. So with those coping mechanisms, it actually made me a better speaker and a more person who could kind of flow from whatever thought, especially when I did live radio or live TV. You just have to flow with it. There's no, like, you know that, there's no going back. There's no take three, you know, you just go with it.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, let's back up a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, go ahead.
Sure. No. Go, David.
No, I just, I'd like you to finish your thought, because I'm going to take you backward in time for a bit. So please finish your thought.
Well, I was going to move on to a new story, so why don't you move
forward?
Oh,
okay. All right. We'll save the story then. You talked about growing up in a Jewish household. I wondered if you could tell us a little bit about what that was like, what your early religious upbringing was like.
Sure. I grew up in Long Island, right about 5 miles as the crow flies from JFK. It was a primarily Jewish neighborhood, and right across the water was a primarily Italian neighborhood. For some reason, when you put a creek between two things, you end up not liking each other just because there's a border, you know?
Mm.
Those people over there are different. My grandparents were highly prejudiced, of people of color and people of different races and things like that. And it was really clouded, you know, really clouded my mind to actually thinking that was true. And even a friend of mine across the street was, his parents were born in China. And, you know, we were mean to him at times. And we were friends at the same time. And it was a very Jewish middle class. We went to temple on the weekends. We did the big holidays. My father only came to temple on the holidays. It was like where people showed up with their fur coats and their babies, and 5,000 people came on the holidays, and maybe a few hundred on, you know, weekly, you know, showed up. So it's very similar to other people's kind of middle class upbringings in that way. And we could sing in Hebrew and read in Hebrew, but we didn't understand what it meant, like at all. We didn't know the meanings. So I was expected to go to Hebrew school after school. A lot of people did that with different religions, and we all hated it. It was like, yeah, that's what I want to do after going to school all day. I want to go to Hebrew school. So we made a lot of trouble, but, you know, it was great money for the temple and, you know, the right thing to do for your kids. And then my parents sent me to Hebrew high school, which I think I went twice the whole year. And no one called your parents because you were paying tuition and, you know, things were going swimmingly. And I really, like, by the time I was bar mitzvah, which is like the becoming a man ceremony, number one, I had to sing my whole bar mitzvah because I stuttered. I couldn't read or give a speech. But stutterers can sing. It's an interesting fact. And that's what the cantor showed me, that I could sing. So I sang the whole thing, and I actually sang a lot of it. But I really didn't have a great belief in God. It wasn't really – my belief in God didn't start until I really in my – I have to think about this. In chiropractic school, I met a teacher named Donald Epstein. He started something called Network Chiropractic. He wrote a book called The 12 Stages of Healing. And he really turned us on that there was much more to life than this physical world, than this flesh, that we are actually this vibrational being, not this solid object. And we could move energy with our minds, with our thoughts, with our intentions, and it was mind-blowing to me. And from there, I went on to take transcendental meditation. I started meditating. I got into Tony Robbins. I started to travel around to seminars all around the country. You couldn't feed me fast enough on spiritual knowledge and movement of energy. And I got out of school in 1988 and started practice up here in Syracuse. And a patient introduced me to this science of Ayurveda, which is the science of life or the science of longevity, which started in India somewhere between 8,000 years ago. And one of my patients introduced me to my spiritual teacher, Satya Sai Baba, and I went off to India and have been there 7 times. So it was like this incredible movement from the time I got into chiropractic school to the time, I just had spiritual teacher after spiritual teacher in a slightly different vein, and, just had this incredible life. And meeting my current spiritual teacher about 10 years ago, I have my ups and downs and goods and bads, and I've learned through spiritual teachings that that's going to happen. Sai Baba always said that, it's not what happens in your life. Our only free will is whether we're happy about it or not. Mm. Our free will isn't that we can change the circumstances, especially in the past. Can't change those mm-hmm. circumstances. The future circumstances don't even exist yet. But we can accept and be happy about what shows up. It's almost like if you got lemons, you make lemonade.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of that. And now in my latest spiritual endeavor, which is called Landmark Education, they just rebranded it as Landmark Worldwide. They really show that what you're leaning into in life. Most of us live like our past is our future. Like, we so predict that our life is going to turn out a certain way, usually in a bad way or an excited way about something, even though the future doesn't exist. What we do is we lean into the future. We put things in front of us that are things that we're passionate about, that mean something to us, and we lean into those future. An interesting story that they tell is to prove that, we live from our past, is that, so say we're at our office and where it's Friday and there's piles of work and the boss wants to have a meeting because the company's in some kind of stress and everybody's worried and everyone's fearful, but you're happy. Why? Because in your pocket you have 2 tickets to go to Hawaii for 2 weeks with the person you love. So you fly off to Hawaii, you spend 2 weeks in Hawaii, and you're sitting there on the beach, maybe with a drink in your hand, maybe, with a beautiful friend or a colleague next to you or a partner, a love for many years. But you look down, and there are the tickets for tomorrow when you're flying home. And you immediately get sad and depressed and thinking, oh, my God, now I have 2 more weeks of work to catch up on. So we do that so much in our lives. We use this predictability of the future, and we put our past in front of us. Like, oh, it's raining, it's going to be a bad day. Or, oh, Monday, it's going to be like those other 5,000 Mondays I've lived. Instead of creating a future to lean into. And that's what we do. We have these weekly classes. They're about an hour away. They're given all over the world. Over 2 million people have taken this course called the Landmark Forum. And we learn that, you know, we are these biological animals, and our brain is incredible, but it's incredible about survival. And if we realize that, our heart can come through, and we can live this creative, abundant life from there. I've talked about, 17 topics since we started?
That's okay. That's okay. You're saving me from having to ask the questions. Well, tell me, how has your concept of God evolved over the years?
Oh, I love that question. So growing up, God was the man with the beard up there somewhere. In the Jewish religion, God is formless. So we don't have a deity or a guru or an idol. It's a formless God, which made absolutely no sense to me. When I went to India the first time, I really got God. I really got devotion. I remember the first day I was in India, and I was sitting with a group of maybe 10,000 people, which I thought was like more people than on earth who would show up in one place, all dressed in white, all focused on the arrival of the guru, of the teacher, Satya Sai Baba. Even the smallest child, when Sai Baba walked out, became still and silent. Mm. I was so jealous of their devotion. It was amazing, the emotion that came out of me. And it grew in me. Devotion grew in me. And the guru, the idol, the practice is all a stepping stone back to the formless, back to that essence of God within us. And Sai Baba used to say, I know I am God. You do not know your God yet. The only difference between you and I is I know that I'm God, and you do not know that you're God yet. You know? So the guru, the teacher, the mystic, is only there as a guide. You know? Sai Ma, who's my current spiritual teacher, Sai Ma Lakshmi Devi, you know, she says, I'm not here to gain disciples. I'm here to make masters. You know, Landmark Education, they want to make leaders out of people. Because when we're, take a simple thing like construction. You know, you have the owner and the foreman and the workers. And the workers constantly ask questions until you make them the foreman. And then they sometimes suddenly know what they're doing, and they can direct other people until they become the owner. And then, wow, they know much more about the whole thing and can direct the whole play. And that's what a master is. A master can see the whole play. And our goal is to keep gaining in spiritual knowledge, in spiritual practice, in awareness, like you mentioned, until we can really see the play happening. And sometimes be the best actor in that play, be the best director in that play, like you are, be the best author in your life. You know, we can be that author in our lives. And sometimes we just need to sit back and watch, which is probably the hardest, is to stop fixing and doing without really seeing the play, you know, where we can take action and make the biggest difference. Sometimes we just throw our energy around.
Well, that's sure as it has been the case for me.
And me.
I'm learning how to channel it, though. And I wanted to ask you, you talked about, well, maybe you didn't, but I wanted to ask you what your spiritual practices are today.
So every morning I wake up, and the voice in my head says, you should stay in bed longer. It's really comfortable. As I get up and I wake my kid up and I get ready to take my son, and we have a young woman living in our house that is in high school too, and I take them to school. And then I go get a cup of coffee. And then I usually, either walk, hike, bike, ski, or spin bike. And then I make myself some food, sometimes breakfast, sometimes lunch. Sometimes I work, sometimes on my off days. I had a car accident 2 years ago and had a couple of surgeries, and I'm still in that mode of recovering from those injuries. And so I have some days at work, and every other day I don't, because I have therapy, I have recovery time, and I have play time, because that's a really important part of life.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in the past, it would be an hour of yoga, half hour of pranayama, meditation. I get up at 4 in the morning. I did pretty intense practices for probably 10 years straight, breathing techniques, all that kind of stuff. Not saying that they're bad, they're wrong, they're amazing and fantastic. And the goal of them is to bring more awareness to your life. And what happens is when I wake up in the morning, my phone says, create your day. That's the first thing it says. It makes a little buzzy sound, and I pick it up, and it says, create your day. Because that is where my day starts, in creation. And I breathe, and I'm aware of my breath, and I get on my spin bike, and I don't spend a long time on it. I do, like, interval training. I find that exercise is really important for me to clear my physiology to move forward in the day. And so exercise intensity is a real big part of my spiritual practice. And, you know, it's not on the yoga mat because of my injuries. It's on the spin bike because that's what I can do. It's on the walking up the hill. That's what I can do. It's skiing down a mountain intensely. That's what I can do. So at different times in my life, I have done different ways to practice. One of my big parts of my spiritual practice, too, is to be involved in life. So before my injuries, I did a lot of volunteering as a chiropractor at a drug and alcohol faith-based rehab. I used to do a ton of house calls to people's houses. But I moved away from that because I can't do that on my time off anymore. I need to save my energy for the work days. Like, I had a very intense work day today. I saw almost 30 people and did multiple things with them. And so it was, like, very intense in 5 hours. And that's part of my spiritual practice, too, is being present with people, being the calm within the storm of sometimes what looks like chaos in the office. So that, my spiritual practice has changed a lot through the years. I do more silence than I do meditation. So, and I teach that a lot to people, is just to be completely still and completely silent as a spiritual practice. I used to read a lot. I'm sitting in my room here with hundreds and hundreds of books that I've read. And I truthfully have read like 5 books in the past 5 years. I just find that doesn't do it for me anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was a massive reader when I first got here to Syracuse. I probably read a book a day, and that's not an exaggeration, probably 5 books a week. And when I did radio, I had to keep up with a lot of reading. And then I just stopped one day. And I really don't miss it, though I do read, the biography of Dale Carnegie, who wrote How to Win Friends and Influence People.
Right.
So once in a while, I will pick up a book and devour it, but I don't find that kind of knowledge interesting to me like it was. But I find being aware, like I take classes once a week, and we have homework to be aware of our kind of common repetitive thinking that we do. Deepak Chopra has said that we have 26,000 thoughts a day, and the only problem is we had 24,000 of them yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we're very repetitive in how we feel and how we think and how we move through our day, and that's a good thing because it allows us to live. We eat, we digest, a trillion things go on in our body a day, including our thoughts, and they're very repetitive, and that's what keeps us alive, keeps us in good situations, keeps our businesses going, keeps our relationships going, keeps our kids safe. And when we notice that our lives are ruled like practically 100% of the time by just our brains functioning, like patterns flowing, neurons firing, we then can find those moments of inspiration, those moments of creativity. We can actually create space for them, openings for them. And that's exciting.
Yes, it is. And as you were talking about your spiritual practice in going through your day, the image that came to me was presence, that you were practicing living in the now. And, it sounds like a lot of your former spiritual practices and training prepared you for being present, and that's what you're doing now. What do you think about that?
And the truth is, most of the time I can become unconscious in a second. So the practice is constantly practicing being present. There is no, you're either present or you're not. And most of the time, I believe we're not, even me. But to get the glimpses of presence is amazing. Like I had, I've been in practice 26 years, and to work, it hurts. Like my wrist hurts when I work. Yesterday, Wednesday, both wrists hurt because I so depend on my other hand. And I'm so in love with what I do. And that, it's almost like, who cares if I'm in pain? Now, the next day, I have to recover from that so I can do it again. But it's so amazing being with people. And I have a different kind of office. I don't take appointments. People kind of flow in the door. They know I'm open. New people, we give them times, but it's just more for their benefit. So because they're used to that, you know? So people flow in and out of here. I had a few people that came in I haven't seen for years, but there's no, like, time lapse. There's no, like, oh, where have you been? It's like, hi, ready? Ready for the journey? And I have some new therapies I've added in my office. I got, 2 years ago, I got T-boned in a car accident. I was standing still. It was an interesting thing. I was sitting at this light behind this young gentleman, and he was like almost lurching forward into the intersection, making a left. And I looked at my son, who was going to be a new driver, and I said, something bad's going to happen here. So I turned the wheel sharply, my foot on the brake. I leaned over to look to see if the light was green, because I could easily go past him and drop my son off going a different way. And bang, I got hit.
Oh,
like,
wow.
I had no idea where it came from. Didn't see it. So he lurched forward into the intersection to make a left turn. He had a green light. The problem was there was a car coming in the other direction. He hit that car. That car increased their speed to miss him, got hit, and hit me.
Oh.
And, I've had physical pain in my life before, but this was, like, ridiculous. It affected my work, my play. I missed a 10-day dream trip to British Columbia to go skiing. It snowed 5 feet while I was there, and all I could do was swim in the hotel, you know, and sit in the hot tub. Couldn't even leave the hotel much. And I went back, and I couldn't work still. My wrist was, like, exploding in pain. But I just got into this light therapy. It's called In Light Wellness System. It's an LED light therapy with frequencies that run through the lights. A friend of mine had Lyme's disease, had a terrific healing from her symptoms of Lyme disease. She had tried many other medical and holistic things. My friend, a chiropractor who got bit by a brown recluse spider, almost lost his life and his leg. And he was struck with severe numbness and ulcers on his feet. And she lent him her machine, and he got better. Not fully better, but better enough in 3 weeks that he could think about working maybe again. And then in 3 months, he was much better. And so I had a treatment. It was pretty cool. And I started using it on my patients. I had incredible results with Raynaud's disease, with neuropathy from diabetes, with wounds, with you know, general pain and suffering we go through in our day. But what it helped me after my car accident, it helped me keep working. So I would literally have those pads on me in between patients. I literally crawled from the couch to the adjusting room back and forth. My patients were so compassionate. They'd come in and they're like, "Are you sure? Do you want to do this? Are you okay?" And I'm like, sure, hobbled over to the table. And it was painful, but it was so joyful at the same time, you know? It's like when you're in your passion, that's okay. Sometimes there's pain. Sometimes there's friction. Sometimes there's intensity. But my knee, 3 months of physical therapy, my knee just wasn't getting better. My physical therapists were going, "You just need surgery. I went to the surgeon. They wouldn't do surgery on my knee because of my wrist injury because I couldn't be on crutches. I found a surgeon. He said, "Crutches? No one uses crutches anymore." He did my surgery on my knee. I haven't taken medication since I was 11. So this was like a new world to get surgery. It was like so out of, not against it at all. I needed it. I was going to get it. I went in for surgery. He put, you know, a large amount of anesthesia in my knee and cut out a piece of my meniscus. And he said, "Look, you're going to be in a lot of pain tomorrow." He called me on the phone the next day and he said, "I gave you those drugs because I want you to walk on your knee, and I don't want you to not because you're in pain." And I used the light therapy, and I had no pain at all.
Are you serious?
I woke up the next day, no pain. He called. Wow. I said, "Well, the pain hasn't started yet." He goes, "Well, you better take those drugs if it does." And then I had surgery on a Wednesday. On Saturday, I went to a friend's house, walked down a big hill in Skinny Atlas slowly, danced at his party very gingerly. But I went to the doctor on Monday and I said, "Can I go back to work? I feel great." And he's like, "Well, sure. If you have no pain, you can go back to work." I said, "Can I ride my bike? I really want to ride my bike. I miss that." And he goes, "Oh, come on. You have to be able to bend your knee." And I bent my knee 120 degrees. And he's like,
"Wow.
Okay, ride your bike." You know, I actually thought it was a coincidence. I really wasn't that like, "Oh, my God, like what a great thing." I was just so happy to work. So I worked on patients with the light therapy. I ended up getting a second light therapy machine. I ended up getting a cold laser, too, which was part of the healing from the knee surgery. And I worked on a lot of people. And then it was time for my wrist surgery, which I delayed because I was so fearful of getting wrist surgery as a chiropractor. You know, that's like, oh, my God, that's my profession. What if it goes wrong? And, you know, you read on the Internet, it goes wrong a lot with people who use their hands for a living. And I had the surgery, and I used the light therapy and the laser, and again, I had no pain. I was supposed to be out 3 to 6 months. I was back to work in 3 weeks.
Amazing.
And then I started working on patients who had surgery. Lo and behold, same results. But it takes more than coming into the office. I had to actually rent my extra machine to people or have people go to the distributor and rent these InLight wellness systems. People want to look it up. It's ILWSystems.com. It's InLightWellnessSystems.com. It's an LED with these layers of frequencies, which I really think actually do the healing. And since 2 years now, I've sold 13 units to patients who have had chronic illnesses who need to use them frequently. So it's worth it to them to buy one rather than come in for treatment and, you know, pay me for them. And it's been great. It's been this new addition to my life. SUNY Oswego, which is a local college in the area, it's about an hour away, did a video study. They interviewed me, two students interviewed me, and they interviewed 12 of my patients, and we created this really great video. And, you know, people are starting to come in from the video because, you know, when you see other people than just the doctor who makes money from this talking about their healings within short time, you know, so I have people with bad knees and shoulders and arthritic wrists and, you know, arthritic necks, and some people get results and some people don't. But most people don't have more than two or three treatments before they realize this really works or it doesn't. That's what I love about it. It's not a Band-Aid. It's a tool that allows your body to work more to its fullest potential of healing. And that's really what I'm about. You know, whether it's, you know, even saying something loving to people, that enhances their ability to heal, or using a tool like chiropractic or herbs in my Ayurvedic practice, or giving people some breathing techniques. All of it is to enhance their body to their greater potential, not me healing them. I don't believe I can heal someone. I believe that their body is this self-healing organism, but sometimes there's blockages. Sometimes there's things in their lifestyle that just don't work for them to get better. You know, I always say to patients that come in, they say, you know, I have headaches. And I say, do you bang your head against the wall? And they're like, of course not. But some people do. They eat in a way that causes them to be sick. They live a lifestyle in a way that causes them to be ill or mentally ill. I have changed my lifestyle radically in the past 25, 30 years, but I am no means a fanatic either. I had two pieces of pizza today. I don't eat pizza a lot, but pizza's great, you know?
I had three pieces today.
See? There's a new pizza place that opened near here, so it's very exciting.
Oh, you'll have to tell me about that sometime.
So that's what I'm about. It's not kind of stuffy, constrictive. I don't have the same plan for everyone to get better here. And I have tools that people can find in their own towns or create it themselves. Two of my patients have created their own healing practice using these lights. You know, it's not restricted to just doctors and healers and, you know, people with licenses. You know, you can go out and help other people while you're helping yourself.
Well, Steve, you've talked about your own remarkable recovery story. What's been your most amazing recovery story?
You mean somebody else or myself?
I don't know. It was a question that you suggested I ask, and perhaps you were the person in mind.
Oh, okay. I understand. Yeah, there have been some, like, these video testimonials that we did. There was this woman, Deb, in my practice that has severe Raynaud's, which people get extremely cold hands and feet. The capillaries actually constrict in their hands and feet. And not only do they get cold, they get ulcers. And sometimes they even start to die off. They get gangrene in their fingers. And she has had six operations to make her hands better. And this Inlight Wellness system she used for 10 minutes. She called me the next day, and she's like, you son of a... And I'm like, what's the matter? She's like, my hands are killing me, just like when I had the operations, when more blood flow started to flow into my fingers. She borrowed my machine. I just had the machine. It was like the first few days. She borrowed it on my days off and used it 2-3 times a day. And in 3 weeks, her hands were not cold. Like you or I, like cold for her, not warm like you or I might have warm hands. So her doctor, who tests her frequently, every time she gets tested, the doctor puts this very sensitive thermometer on her fingertip, and it wouldn't register at all. Like, it wouldn't even start. She went in, and it moved 5 degrees. And he was like, oh, my God, 5 degrees is what she got from having six operations. In 3 weeks, she had 5 degrees. In 3 months, she had 21 degrees difference. She had normal
hands. My goodness.
just like you or
wow.
I, which was wow. miraculous. I had a 17-year-old who had a pars fracture, which is a genetically caused fracture of having not enough blood flow in a certain part of your lower back, in your lumbar vertebrae. And he was a wrestler, always had back pain. His dad has this problem. His brother has this problem. And then he played football, and that was it. The doctor x-rayed him, MRI, CAT scan, and told this kid he would never play sports again. He'd have back pain the rest of his life, and he'd wear a back brace the rest of his life. And, you know, as a 17-year-old, he was, you know, it was profound, but he was scared. He was like, okay, doc, I'm not doing anything. And his mother's chiropractor, his chiropractor too, sent them in to me to try this cold laser therapy. And this is a different therapy that you have to have some certificate, certification, doctor kind of thing, physical therapist to use. And I treated him. And like most patients, I said, here's my cell phone number. Give me a text or a buzz the next day and tell me how you're doing. And he called me back the next day and he goes, I'm in just as much pain as I was before. And I said, you know, it doesn't work on everyone. Why don't you come back for your appointment 2 days later? And he came back with this huge smile on his face and obviously no back brace. And he said, I don't have any more pain. And I said, wow. Well, let's treat you anyway. So we treated him. And we weren't adjusting him. We're just doing this cold laser because, to me, there was a fracture there. And then, you know, he'd get a little sore if he did too much. And we told him not to wear his big backpack to school. 5 treatments later, he was still out of pain. And I'm like, well, why don't you go do some exercise? And he's like, oh, the doctor said I shouldn't do that. And I said, well, why don't you go back to the doctor and tell him you don't have any more pain? So he went back to the doctor, and the doctor was like, oh, you're not wearing your brace? Like, mad at him. He's like, well, I don't have any pain. He's like, well, you could make this worse, blah, blah, blah. So they ended up retesting, and the fracture had healed.
Wow.
A fracture that was not supposed to heal because there was no blood flow. So what the light therapy and the cold laser does is it decreases inflammation, and it increases circulation. Now, inflammation causes heart disease, cancer, diabetes, viral attacks, you know, so many different physiological reactions. Arthritis, start with inflammation. So if we decrease inflammation and increase increase circulation, then the body can heal itself. We give the body a chance to get over that hump of illness, disease, lack of ease in the body. And it was incredible.
How does the body heal?
Say that again?
How does the body heal?
Well, the body, so one of my teachers, I asked my teacher this question. I said, you know, when you put a seed in the ground, like what happens? And this was in India. And the teacher said, you put a seed in the ground and the entire blueprint of the seed is there. So like the full tree is there, the broccoli plant, the cabbage, the sequoia, like it's there. And the tree grows into that. Or into the plant. So when we are created, when the sperm and egg come together, like we are made, like our blueprint is there. And sometimes there are places in the blueprint that don't have the right connections. There might be nerve damage. There might be circulatory damage. There might be things that just don't connect right. And if you can, now a lot of even babies have defects in the womb, and they end up turning out okay, sometimes not. But things can be corrected if you can get the flow there. So where there's no flow, the blueprint has trouble. You know, you cut a limb off a tree, the blueprint's still there, but the limb can't grow. So this blueprint of his vertebrae was there, but there was no blood flow. So the light excited the tissue, the cells, the space. And blood flow came into there. Capillaries grew. And with that came life, you know? that tissue was then nourished to become tissue. Now, it didn't become the exact bone it used to be. It actually scarred over healed over with scar tissue, because that's what the body could make. So the body's incredible. It does what it needs to do. I believe that at any time we have different kinds of dis-ease in the body, that the body's correcting. But our body's got to deal with a lot. You know, we have, 50, 60,000 chemicals that weren't here, 50, 60, 70 years ago. We have to deal with all these kind of fake foods and fake flavor enhancers and chemicals and colors, and still our body is pretty well. We deal with drugs, we deal with alcohol, we deal with other pollution and substances, and still we're fairly well. The problem is, I always say God doesn't make junk. We just treat it that way. And sometimes what the body needs is, and this is what I frequently do with patients, is the body needs like a rest. So I put patients on this food fast. If you go to my website, drsteveradio.com, it's drsteveradio.com, I have recipes for this mung bean soup fast. I've done this soup fast with probably over 1,000 people in the world. We did it on the Dr. Oz show last May. And people just fast on this single kind of lentil soup for 1 week, 4 to 6 days. And it's amazing how people get better. And people go, oh, the soup is so magical. And I say, it's not the soup. It's what you're not eating. We eat things that are incompatible with our individual body types. According to Ayurveda, we each have different body types, air, water, and fire. And we have to live our lives in accordance to our unique original blueprint. So sometimes we need to eat a little differently than our neighbor or our friend or someone else in our family. I genetically have heart disease, diabetes, high cholesterol given to me by my mother and father's blueprint. But I just have to eat differently not to get those things. Doesn't mean sometimes my blood pressure is a little high, got to work on that. Sometimes my cholesterol is a little high, got to work on that. But I don't do it by taking unnatural things to stamp it out, to block it, to choke it off. I eat certain foods, I take certain herbs, I live a certain lifestyle, I move a certain way to reduce my chances and possibly avoid these genetic defects or chinks in our armor that have come from generations of, our bodies evolving to where they are now. Like, I don't believe that we have fully evolved as a species. I think our biggest evolution is coming in spirituality, in consciousness, in awareness.
I do too.
Yeah. And that's fabulous. I mean, look at our lives now compared to, 50 years ago, 100 years ago, 500 years ago. We're so much more aware, and technology is part of that awareness. Technology has brought us the greatest and the worst. Religion has brought us the greatest and the worst. Anything really good will bring us the greatest and the worst. It's just how we choose to use it.
Oh, that's true. Very true. Well, we are
I'm so enjoying this, David, by the way.
Well,
I really appreciate
it. I am too. I'm just fascinated by you. You tell some wonderful stories, and I've learned a lot. I was just going to say we're coming towards the end of the hour, so we probably have time for, believe it or not, it's 8:25.
Wow.
No, I'm going to ask you one more question, and that is,
sure.
What is transformation versus change?
So change is like the difference between an apple and an orange, or a triangle and a circle. That's change. And we do that a lot. We change our spouses. We change our foods we eat. We change the way we do business. But transformation is the difference between a circle and a sphere, a triangle and a tetrahedron, an apple and a different form of an apple. It's an enhancement in dimension. So we are a multidimensional being, and we're becoming aware of our multidimensionality. And to live a life within transformation, and that's what we do in this landmark worldwide, these landmark education classes, is we pay attention to our transformation. When we're transforming, it's about love, it's about joy, it's about passion. When we're in our change, we're in our fear. Relationship isn't going well, let's change relationships. Money isn't going well, let's change what we do. I'm not feeling well, I'll eat something else. It's not transformation. Transformation comes from being passionate about being aware of life itself. And life is so incredible at every single moment. And it just takes to be aware of it and to be aware when we're being authentic in life.
True. Very true. Well, I really would like to thank you, Steve. We don't have much time left, so I think that we'll call it a wrap. I appreciate you being on the show tonight.
I'd love to do this again sometime. I am
like
totally brimming over with joy right now. I really appreciate it.
That's wonderful. Well, it's been my pleasure, trust me. And I had more questions for you, so we'll do it another time.
Fabulous, David. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Steve. You take good care.
You too. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay, goodbye. So once again, we come to a close. Now we can pause and reflect upon the idea that we are all united through the diverse tapestry of our individual gifts. There is no real thing as separation except in our own minds. We are each unique expressions of the ultimate source of our beings. We are indeed spiritual beings having a human experience who are having a spiritual experience. Have a great week, and remember, whatever you dream, you can realize.
You have been listening to Different Strokes for Different Folks. To find common ground and take it to the next level, here on Blog Talk Radio with David Clark, every Friday at 7:30 p.m. Eastern. You can listen to this broadcast again on srbroadcasting.com.